For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Tommy, Ocean Chinook or Puget Sound Coho, what is your palate favorite?
And you drop that kokanee on top of that barn door halibut's head, 67 feet of water, and he was not happy about that.
Well, I don't know. What do you think? Boxers or briefs?
Ooh, I'm going to have to go with a European cut Speedo.
Fantastic. Excellent choice.
I love tuna. I do love tuna.
Heck yeah! Hey, you know, I have a buddy who refers to Canadian geese as flying carp. Obviously, he's not cooking them.
Right? He clearly. Right? Oh, ocean snook.
Seriously?
Hands down.
Really?
Hands down. I don't fish for coho.
Ah, good point. Hey, speaking of grind, can you tell the difference between ground deer and ground elk? Honestly, taste the difference.
You know, Dwayne, we only get one chance to live this life. Mm-hmm. And you will always regret the things that you don't do. So you know what I tell people? Buy the damn boat.
Hey, you know, the facts are, some days are just a grind. Welcome to Fish Hunt Northwest, the number one fishing and hunting talk show throughout the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Now here's your host, Dwayne England, and of course, the infamous Tommy Donlan. Hello, and welcome to Fish Hunt Northwest. Dwayne England, Tommy Donlan, coming to you from the Fish Hunt Northwest studio here in Olympia, Washington. And can you believe it's mid-March?
It's hard to believe, man. February flew by. And we're already in the middle of March.
Literally in mid-March, and the weather today compared to what we dealt with Monday, which we'll get into a little bit here, is like, I mean, 180-degree polar opposite.
I know. It's nuts.
This spring weather, this early spring weather like this, I hope you folks are out there getting some time to enjoy it and get out on the water and take advantage of this little-to-no wind days and sunshine. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Tommy, with some of the fisheries that are still open and opening. So,
that's right. Yeah. Ocean's open now. Bottom fishing's open.
Yep. So. Yep. We just got to get those weather windows of no blustery winds and huge huge fronts moving in.
Right.
So a little bit to discuss on that as well. Want to welcome everybody to the show. Appreciate you tuning in. If it's your first time joining in here, hey, take some time to get on here and chat along with us. If you're joining us this evening live, first time joining us on Root Sports, take some time, find out who we are. Go to our webpage, www.fishhuntnw.com. There you're going to find a whole lot of information, great blogs, video links to all our social media platforms. And of course, coupon codes that you need to take advantage of. FHN20 at checkout for Edge Rods. All Edge Rods, 20% off all the time through Fish Hunt Northwest and Edge Rods. Not already previously attached to another reduced pricing. And then, of course, Phelps Game Calls. All Phelps game calls, 10% off. Fish Hunt NW10 at checkout and save 10% all year long on Phelps calls. And as you mentioned last week, boy, just can't even believe it. Turkey hunting's just right around the corner.
Yeah, turkey hunting's coming. I mean, before we know it, we're going to be fishing for tuna. I mean, speaking of tuna, I've had a couple of buddies take advantage of the FHN coupon for edge rods.
Oh, that's so great.
Bought that 7630, man.
Did they really?
Getting ready.
Oh, yeah,
it's time to get ready.
Yeah, you might as well get them now because once you get in right before season, huge flush of people trying to get their hands on the fishing rod appropriate for that fishery. Halibut rods, lingcod rods, if you're late to the party, get it in now because you still got through October to fish lingcod, right? And and a number of opportunities with the abundance of halibut quota we have yet to get to. So, hey, between last week and now, I've been on the road, been to multiple fisheries. And, you know, last week we headed down and we knew weather was coming in, but we had to get down there on the sleds, fish steelhead with Kyle. And we did get Monday in. And Matt did a great job. We filmed as much as we could. We got into 7 or 8 fish on a rising river, beginning to turn off collar. Oh, gosh, it was brutal. I didn't catch a fish. I had two great takedowns, didn't stick either one. That's just, it happens. It's fishing.
Yep.
But I think we're going to be able to bring that to you here in the next week or so. Pretty good content, although it was challenging with the weather in the rising river. And just, we got blown off Tuesday morning. It was completely punched. We literally just headed home. And then, of course, back out on the water today, chasing blackmouth, myself, Matt Messing, and Scott Cole, partner and owner there at Brad's. He came up, wanted to fish. I got to tell you, Tommy, all we did was deploy all Brad's gear today. Cut plugs, the original super bait, original skinny. And the Brad's Evolution Flasher. It's all we fished. And man, we just, it
one
was
after the other.
Just gangbusters. And I know a handful of you guys did well out there today in the last couple of days here with these weather windows. And a lot of fish, you know, gosh, a lot of fish right there at the bar, man. Just right 21-22. Just right in there. And then you get a few larger fish every once in a while. But I think some of those, the bigger ones are beginning to get bonked and taken out of the equation. Yep. Yeah. So nonetheless, we got much more content to bring you in regards to the blackmouth fishing. Let's get to it. Let's run down the show before we get too far along here tonight. If you didn't catch it, the Senate dropped a $1.5 million amount from the budget, the state budget, and that was allocated for sea lion control. Why'd they drop it? What the heck's the deal? Tommy and I are going to get into that. Then welcoming back as a guest, Captain Paul Kim. You guys are all familiar with him. Fish, PNW Guide Service, and Seattle Squid. Puget Sound Blackmouth, how is the season so far? And then part two with Captain Paul. Truly, how to fish in Puget Sound, Tommy, Area 10. That's his backyard. He's got it pretty well dialed. We'll see what he does to find success out there compared to some of the things we're doing. Want to follow up with you guys on House Bill 2293. Now, this was introduced by J.T. Wilcox, Representative Wilcox, studying the effects of avian predation on salmon. Another study, Tommy, really? But we have some info on this and why.
This is a good one.
Yep. Welcoming to the show, Jared Cady, Get 'em Dry Fishing Company, the OP. Has been fishing pretty darn good for winter, this for steelhead. Just how good, we're going to go over that with Jared. Then, of course, part two with him, bank fishing, boat fishing, finding fish, how to find success, and those crazy rules that were deployed for this season and what they were subjected to. Then we'll close out the show with a few highlights and a few notes. So don't go anywhere. Jumping out for a quick break. We come back, we got a little discussion on avian predation, something you may want to pay attention to. Come back from this break right here, Fish on Northwest.
Defiance Marine is the one-stop shop for the Pacific Northwest angler. Defiance Marine guarantees the best price on a new and best service on a repower for your current boat. Defiance Marine is a Honda Premier dealership and one of the largest on the West Coast. Defiance Marine is a boat dealer who proudly sells Defiance, Allied, and Arima boats. All boats are built by West Coast fishermen for West Coast fishermen. Defiance Marine has all your boating needs to help you get out on the water.
If you're looking for the best fishing rods in the world, you really do need to take a look at the Edge rods. I designed and built new machinery, and I think this new machinery has enabled us to build blanks like no other company could build without this equipment. There is no other rods in the world that are as good as these rods. You owe it to yourself to take a good look at them.
All right, welcome back to the show, Dwayne England, Tommy Donlin. And I think going to the break, I said...
you said avian.
We got so much predation.
We'll get there.
We'll get there later on. Boy, that's another one. Hey, in case you didn't catch it, the Senate dropped the $1.5 million from the state budget.
Yeah.
That was allocated for sea lion control. The original story read... $71.6 billion operating budget that cleared the Senate Friday includes $1.5 million for the WDFW to combat sea lion predation on the lower Columbia River, thanks to amendment introduced by Senator Jeff Wilson, representative from Longview. But at the last minute, the proposal from Senator Wilson to get the state officials to give the money they needed to combat sea lion predation and on the Columbia and its tributaries was defeated behind closed doors. And... this week, lawmakers negotiated the final budget deal, and they purposefully just removed that out of there, right? The budget passed in the final hours, and they deleted that $1.5 million. Meanwhile, recognizing we have growing sea lion herd population, and they are further up the tributaries than we've seen in years, in a number of tributaries, and it just keeps growing.
Yeah.
And they had an opportunity to like allocate some monies.
They did.
And they chose to remove it.
Yeah. So this one's going to really test your emotional IQ here for a second. So you're just going to have to bear with this.
I think it will.
This is a tough one to listen to, right? Because we're talking about 1.5 million out of 71.6 billion.
Exactly.
With a B.
Yes.
Just a smidging that was allocated to sea lion control. Okay. So Senator Jeff Wilson, Republican from Longview, stated that the region loses about 12% of salmon to predation. Okay. And you know, it's one thing if you lose small predation, the outgoing small. We're going to get to that with the avian predation.
Yeah, correct.
But it's a whole nother thing if these fish are returning to the river, you've got that minute wild stock and you're losing that stock to sea lions that have traveled upwards of 70 miles to get to the barrier dam up the Cowlitz.
Yep.
And it's getting worse, right? Yep. We see it every year. People are like, what's that? And it's not just one or two pinnipeds.
Correct.
It is a herd
hundreds
of sea lions.
Thousands.
Yep.
Not hundreds of thousands, but hundreds in some rivers and thousands in other areas. So, and your point is spot on in that it's a nominal amount of money for that particular region exclusively. Like they want to get to work on this transition point, the Cowlitz and the Lewis and other rivers within that Longview demographic, and they exit out of the deal. Now, the Marine Mammal Protection Act that's been in place since 1975, this is a federal oversight that protects pinnipeds of all species of pinniped within the state of Washington. And so they're recognized as protected and I believe still considered endangered, although the ceiling on this thing has far exceeded what the carrying capacity of our waters are. NOAA last year officially came out and did recognize the growth of both seal and sea lion populations as an overabundance.
Yep.
They've basically said, we have an issue here. We have an overabundance of this population. Okay. Talk is talk. It's time. Right. It's time for action. And it's time for the feds and the state to start taking some serious action towards minimizing the amount of fish these critters are consuming.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, and we're talking, you know, specifically sea lions when we're talking about the Columbia River.
Right.
But anybody that fishes the Puget Sound
would know as well.
Knows that harbor seals are a huge problem in the Sound.
Yep.
So let's not forget about them either. And you know, Wilson, he worked with you know, all of the stakeholders involved, and he was absolutely shocked to learn that the House Democratic negotiators refused to accept this 1.5 million for sea lion control, given the fact that the feds are telling you point blank there's an overabundance, right? And here's where you're going to get mad. I'm just giving you a warning.
Oh, that's right.
If you're holding any object, you may want to put it down. So here's what Wilson had to say. I was told that they couldn't bear the thought of euthanizing sea lions. Quote, with all due respect, I think my colleagues need to be educated about this threat to our struggling salmon and steelhead runs. Taking the side of the sea lions is a little like rooting for the New York Yankees.
He's not far off on that. I mean, here we go again, Tommy. Now it's even the state legislators were subjected to emotional sensations. We're subjected to emotions of our legislators when they're in a opportunity to make decisions on monies to be allocated to, you know, for the preservation of and recovery of salmon and steelhead. How many billions of dollars has the state spent? And yet you want to just ignore one of the biggest things hitting us in the face in this predation stuff. And that's why we're kind of covering it tonight, because we are, you know, deep in rooted right now north of Falcon. We're talking about seasons and all this and allocations. And yet we are faced with ongoing battles with these sea lions. Look, they consume up to 40 pounds a day. At least 12% of the river systems of the fish are lost to predation. I mean, there are a number of statistics here that are just a mind blow. What kills me is that they will say no to 1.5 million in regards to whatever they wanted to do in that region to combat sea lions. But these are the same legislators that are jumping on board with the current Biden administration. And man, they are raising the flag to say, remove those dams on the lower Snake River to the tune of billions upon billions of dollars to you and I and the taxpayers of the state of Washington.
That's right.
It's like they want to do that for a huge money grab for some groups.
Right.
And they want to push through this ideal of removing these Snake River dams and all the how complicated that is.
Yeah.
And yet they can also get with the feds and get working on a plan to start removing sea lions.
Right.
And they won't even allocate monies to even you know, for a small window.
Well, so, exactly. I mean, to your point, right? I mean, when you do a root cause analysis on the problem with our declining salmon stocks, right, on the wild side, it is very obvious, right? This is, there is no rebuttal to the argument that removal of seals and sea lions increases salmon recovery.
Absolutely. Okay? It's been proven.
And that cost $1 million to $2 million relative to a $75 plus billion budget. Mm-hmm. It has the largest impact with the smallest amount of cost.
Yep.
Yet we will go and spend billions of dollars chasing salmon recovery and spend money in places where you get little to no return on investment.
Yep. And start having that conversation about dam removal and stuff. And you know, I could continue to go on about this, but we're up against a hard break. So just a little bit of insight on the fact legislators, I think it's because it was partisan. They just were like, you know, a Republican brought it to us. We can't, we're not going to go there. So anyway, I hate it when politics gets in the way of common sense and doing the right thing for aiding us in our salmon recovery. All right, going to jump out for a quick break. Don't go anywhere. Great information coming up with this next gentleman, our first guest of the evening, Captain Paul Kim, after the break, right here, Fishing Northwest.
Allied, the new leader in heavy gauge aluminum boats. Allied boats have standard reverse chine and lifting rakes to help you plane faster and run at lower RPMs. Allied boats have several models to choose from, ranging from a 19-foot Mustang all the way up to a 32-foot Liberator. So regardless of what type of heavy gauge aluminum boats you are looking for, Allied Boats will have it for you. Contact Allied Boats today to learn more about these incredible fishing machines.
Back here to the show, Dwayne and Tommy Donlin, and welcoming back to the show, it's been a bit, Captain Paul Kim, Fish PNW Guide Service in Seattle Squid. You can find him at www.fishpnw.com and or www.seattlesquid.com. Paul, thanks for taking some time out and joining us back on the show this this evening here.
Oh, you bet. My pleasure. We had a little bit of audio and technical difficulties last time around, so I want to make sure we're good to go today.
I think you are. Yeah, we're not talking squid. We're talking blackmouth, your other favorite species to chase in your backyard. So we had an opportunity here in 10-11 for a couple weeks now, 4 days per week, weather permitting, as we've been pushed off the water a few times. So far, how's the fishing been for you? Seems to be a decent number of fish around, although not
just it's fantastic. You know, I've actually fished every single day of the opening availability ever since started March 1 and 2nd. We had some rough weather SCAs on the 1st and 2nd. And so, you know, we got a little bit of a snapshot on it. But, you know, fish were caught. But, you know, it's really improved over the last week, really.
Yeah.
That Wednesday, the last Wednesday, it really just lit up. And so with this good weather, these good tides, there's lots of fish out there and lots of bait.
That's awesome. It's prime time. Yeah. So, hey, let's talk about the size of the fish historically. You know, I mean, this is the fishery that used to start on January 1st. And then we had too many sublegal encounters. We said, hey, let's move it to February 1st. We still were seeing a high number of sublegal encounters. And now we've moved it into March. So do you think, you know, based on what you're seeing, is that helping us out to avoid those sublegal encounters?
And absolutely. I mean, we are getting very, very few sublegal encounters out there. And so, you know, we're pulling out some quality fish. And so, I mean, definitely hats off to the department for pushing it back so we don't end up with a potential early closure due to those sublegal encounters. So definitely having it extend. You know, we got nicer weather. People are kind of back getting their boats ready for the season, and this is kind of the shakedown and warm-up for the summer. It's a lot of fun. It's great to be back on the water.
As we recognize, or as we mentioned, you know, one of the key factors to get us off the water is that sublegal encounter rate. So Paul, do you buy into size of gear presentation a little larger in size to keep off those small fish?
A shaker is going to take a plug just as well, a larger offering too, you know, and so, you know, even if you put out bait there, they're going to take it just as well. So, you know, just these are all hatchery origin fish to begin with, right? And so I say fish what you like, fish it with confidence. But I do tend to pull some larger gear because, you know, we don't want to get those 19s and 20s. We're looking for those, you know, 24, 25, up to 30. We pulled a 30 a few days ago, so.
Yeah, well, and, you know, and the bigger gear too, right? They have problem getting hooked deep. So a lot of times they will get hooked in the corner of the mouth when you're running some bigger gear. So talk to us about where in the water column you're seeing these fish and you're catching these
fish? Gosh, I mean, we're pulling out all of our fish, mostly dragging the bottom, pounding the balls in the mud.
Yep.
Classically, you know, every fish that we're pulling out, they've got scrapes along their gill plates. And so they're rooting around down there. This all coincides with the fantastic amount of bait and herring that's in the water right now. They're getting ready for the spawn, and those blackmouth know it. And so they're in hot pursuit of this bait. And when they see our offering out there, they are not shy about climbing on and jumping aboard.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're pretty aggressive on the bite. There's no doubt about it. So
absolutely.
Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to switch gears here and really get into some technique points and what Captain Paul Kim likes to do to find success out there. So we're going to jump out for a quick break. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're going to really get into the nitty gritty here, the details with Captain Paul Kim, so he can help you find success out there on Puget Sound for blackmouth. After this break, right here at Fish in Northwest.
Support from Northwest Sportsmen make Federal Ammunition the world's leading ammunition manufacturer. Federal uses the industry's finest materials, giving you reliable ammunition that delivers superb accuracy and optimum performance. Northwest hunters rely on Sportco to provide the best selection and prices in the Northwest since 1985. Sportco and Outdoor Emporium in Fife and Seattle. Your journey begins here.
All right, welcome back here in studio with Captain Paul Kim. Paul, we're going to get right into it. Chasing blackmouth, area 10 in your backyard there. What is your go-to, always start with first thing in the morning kind of approach? Spoons, hoochies, plugs, or do you kind of move it around a little bit?
Definitely spoons. I love a nice big spoon with a good profile on that, a lot of action there. It's a nice way to kind of get gear down and deployed and then searching for fish, you know, that might be deep or suspended. And so I'm also paying attention closely to my electronics to look for arches as well as the bait. And so we've been particularly really, really happy with using these new West Coast spoons, the fatties and the naughties, in that 3.5 size. Irish cream is doing really well. Mm. Cookies and cream as well, and the herring aid colors. So pretty much anything you put down there, just keep it active, keep it moving, and those fish won't be far behind for sure.
Man, fatties and naughties, I kind of resemble that description.
Is he describing you?
A little bit, I think so. Hey, Paul, talk to us about flashers. Okay, what's the flasher setup, and do you like breakaway flashers, or how do you rig them?
I do like breakaway flashers. We've kind of modified a couple of flashers using kind of the I think it's a Simpson magnetic releases, but I'm really curious to try some of those Brad's flashers, those breakaways. I like that bungee idea. Yeah. So I want to give those a try.
I'd like to try those too, but Dwayne hasn't shared any yet. So
Tommy doesn't fish Puget Sound, so I'm, you know.
Yeah. So lately I've been actually using a product from Squid Pro Tackle. It's a 10 inch flasher. It's a little shorter than the traditional 11 inch, and it turns over a lot easier, and you don't seem to quite fight it as much as a traditional 11 inch flasher.
Gotcha. So yeah,
pretty good.
You like the Brad's flashers there also. They're a single fin, but they the revolution on it is fantastic. Yeah. And they're a 10 inch flasher as well.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
They perform well. So, hey, let's get into some details here. You know, some guys get really hung up on leader length, and I know fish a lot with my buddy Matt Messing. He's just like, you know, whatever, this is good enough. And do you have a specific leader length that you kind of stick to when it comes to?
You know, I don't. I mean, some people say 42, so 40, mm-hmm. 40, but, you know, I just stretch out my arm, and between my sternum plate to the edge of my arm, I'm somewhere around 37 to 40 inches in there. Not so much important about the leader length as it is the cable angle and the speed that you impart on your troll.
I agree.
Just to kind of make sure that flasher's turning over, that you got action in your spoon and you're enticing that strike. So definitely use scent if you've got it on your lures. It does make a difference. So a little anise, a little herring scent, sometimes a little bloody tuna is good to go.
Oh, God, everybody loves tuna, man. Mm-hmm. You know that, yeah. Paul.
Oh, yeah.
So you kind of alluded to it, but I want to cover it, you know, for those that are, you know, since this fishery is in our backyard, you know, just you can reach it out of Seattle, Show, a lot of different ports. Help people out. What troll speed are they targeting? And what can you tell folks about looking at the line angle on their downrigger?
Well, depending on the tide, you know, I like typically like to troll with it, but that's not always possible, you know, due to weather or currents going on. So I really just kind of look at cable angle. So about a 45 degree, I like to keep that going and then kind of couple that with the speed. If I'm going against the tide, I'm going to want to pick it up a little bit more just so that I keep action and impart movement constantly within that flasher spoon combo.
Absolutely.
You said, you know, you kind of like the spoon game. You fish much bait. Now you had mentioned scent.
Yeah,
what about when you cure up your, what is it, anchovy or herring for you? And do you add any anise to your bait?
I don't. I simply just do a real quick salt cure, a brine-based salt cure. I pull out my herring in the morning, put it in a baggie or my little cooler, add some salt and some seawater, and it's ready to go. I pull it on a Rhys Davis head. These herring are really large inside the stomach contents of these fish. Green label, blue label. Don't be shy about running a bigger than typical herring that'll stuff inside one of those anchovy heads, because it'll fish as well if you don't want to pull spoons hardware.
Are you finding, Paul, are you finding these fish traveling in a specific depth of water? Are you finding them all the way from, say, 85 out to 300 feet, or in terms of depth, what's the magic number?
Yeah, no, it's sometimes the bait's there, and that's a big clue. Sometimes the bait's there and we don't pull fish. And so, but typically, what we've been fishing lately is about the 170 to 180 foot line. But bait can be found between right now 200 to 250 mm-hmm. out there, and fish can be caught just as well. So, if you haven't already, make sure you've got enough downrigger wire to make sure that you can pull, in those extreme currents or depths. So I'd recommend that. So it might be a good time to tune up your downriggers before you head out to do the black mouth.
That's right. And I know you're running the anodized aluminum spools for your Scotties.
Yeah. So you can load them up.
So that you can absolutely load them up with 700 to 900 feet if you need to. And
absolutely.
Our good buddy Trevor Jackson is making those now, just got his patent. So
they're fantastic. They're game changers. And so, you know, if you break off at 300 feet, you still got plenty to work with.
Good to go.
I spool them up with 800 feet on each one of those spools, and they go deep.
Awesome. A lot of line. Hey, Paul, real quick before we get out of here, provided the fishery extends all the way to the goal date, target date of April 15th, do you have any openings? April. And if so, how do folks get a hold of you and book a trip?
Yeah, so we're all on social media. It's Instagram as well as Facebook. You can look for us at Fish PNW Guide Service. You can see this and reach out to us, fishpnw.com, or find us on our socials, CL Squid or FISHN_PNW.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Well, always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate you taking some time and great info tonight. Thank you very much.
You bet, gentlemen. Have a good evening. Thanks for having me out.
Captain Paul Kim, look him up on all social media platforms. You will experience a great day with him on the water. Tommy, we're going to jump out for a quick break and come back. We're going to delve into this avian situation and why do we need more money for a study? Well, we're going to let you know all about it after this break right here, Fish on Northwest.
Hey guys, I'm Big Mike. Come on down to the Edge Pro Shop and see me. We've got all the best brands under one roof. We've got Hawken, Pro-Cure, Short Bus, Pro Troll, Yakima Bait, Get 'em Dry Jigs, Northwest Bait Scent, Daiwa Reels, North Fork Lures, North Wild, Brad's, Superfly, Rocky Mountain Tackle, and of course, the greatest rods ever built, Edge Rods.
I'm here in the show, Dwayne, with Tommy Dolan. And Tommy, I kind of perused the old interwebs this week, and I was picking up on some of the things passed through legislation. And you know, credit to our buddy and friend, Representative J.T. Wilcox. And he put through 7 or 8 that we talked about with him early on in session and what he was trying to push through. And one of them did land and receive the nod and was signed. And so a little follow-up on House Bill 2293. Now, what is it? Studying the effects of avian predation on salmon. Primary sponsor, Representative J.T. Wilcox. A little history on the avian management here, because this has been in turmoil for quite some time.
Yes.
The intent here is the Department of Fish and Wildlife shall convene an avian salmon predation work group, identify all avian species that contribute to the predation on salmon, and they're going to determine which species adversely impact the recovery and any threat in their endangered salmon species and identify the remedies. Now, on the surface, this is like, well, that sounds like a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
Because we do have to put in the work in the study to develop the data to move forward, right?
That's right. So then it goes in and talks about the breakdown of the committee. And I kind of like what I'm seeing here. You know, so the bulk of the committee, we've got five tribal members, which is great, right? We always partner with the tribes to be able to have our fisheries every year.
Especially if you want
to
get anything done.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Sure.
So that's number one, five tribal members. One member from each of the following departments. So one from WDFW, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, ODFW, Puget Sound Partnership, and then we also have recreational commercial interests as well. And this group has until June 30th of 2025, so just over a year, a few months, to report out to the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Correct. And one thing we know for certain is that if you recognize an issue or want to try to, you know, introduce something or change, you gotta provide the data. You gotta provide the science. You gotta provide the need,
right,
and show that intervention is going to have a positive cause or outcome, especially when it comes to saving salmon steelhead runs.
Right.
Problem is, we've also been up against a commission as of late that we've provided them with unbelievable science,
and they've ignored it.
Yep. From the folks working in the field, more so in the hunting realm as of late, but they get denied and turned down and say, we don't have time for your science. So hopeful that all this work and effort does land somewhere with future production moving forward.
Right. It does concern me, though, if the final solution, recommended solution, is to basically put these birds down, right, to take them out of the system. Because obviously, the commission, we've got some bird huggers there, and they're just not going to allow that. So
this is true.
Now, this isn't the first time that we've actually had an avian predation study. We had a report that came out in 2019.
Correct.
It was an 11-year study.
Yep.
On basically the predation of various bird species and their effect on our salmon runs and our smolt, out migrant smolt. And, surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, because due to the sheer numbers of birds, but avian predation is a huge source of smolt mortality.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. And so it accounts for over half of the deaths of smolts between Rock Island Dam and the middle of the Columbia River and Bonneville Dam on the lower Columbia. So that distance of 307 miles affecting over half of that out-migrant smolt population.
Yeah, within that 11-year study, they recognized that there was a massive consumption of migrant smolt. And this was predominantly on steelhead. So this study that they're advocating for is now focused on salmon. And they are different in their swim, in closer to surface or depth, and closer to shoreline or more mid-channel. So they're either easily, more easily picked off by birds or not. And the steelhead have been proven to do so. And 50% mortality on the upper basin above Bonneville and below, an additional 28% from Bonneville to the estuary waters. Collectively, we're talking, north of 70% of our birds.
That's
over
this
11-year study. They recognize on a regular basis, 70% of out-migrant smolt steelhead are being consumed by avian predators.
Right. Well, and it's a gauntlet for them, right? So there are 14 colonies of fish-eating birds that, as those juvenile fish migrate down the Columbia River and the Snake River, they've got to pass each of those colonies of birds, right? And so you've got gulls, you've got Caspian terns, and you've got cormorants, right?
Yep.
And as you know, right, this migration of smolt also coincides with the hatching of a lot of these birds, right?
Spring's
so not only are
thing.
They feeding themselves,
yes,
they are feeding all of their hatchlings that have come out into the world as well.
So just to summarize this before we got to get out of here, because we're up against a break, unfortunately, previous research and study, they did implement plans and take measures, right? Mm-hmm. And they were hazing and trying to get birds to move. And they took a lot of the terns and moved them off of Rice Island, which is a man-made island above the Astoria Megler Bridge. And they were successful in getting them to disperse and not nest so much in that part of the region. The cormorants, on the other hand, are a huge problem, and that their survivability seems to be coming back.
Right.
They did knock them down for a few years, like 2015, 16, 17. They were literally shooting birds down there on East Island. They were destroying eggs, and they brought the populations down. They also were hazing and wanted them to move. And this is the history I'm trying to tell you guys about. Studies are great. Monies for studies are great. And then taking action is great, until it doesn't work. As in now, We've moved the Comrades, or excuse me, Comrades, yes.
To the Astoria Bridge.
To the Astoria Bridge.
That's right. And 5,600 mating pairs now.
So it's become a huge problem. They were on East Island. They were bringing the populations down.
Right.
Now we have the largest in the North Flyway. We've got the largest cormorant population on that bridge, which is now going to become you're an engineer.
Yeah, right.
Think about doing inspections on bridges that are covered in bird feces and it looks like they're trying to paint the bridge white.
It's creating other issues now.
Everybody's wondering why all them birds are on that substructure of that bridge and how can there be so many? Well, we intervened. We tried. We were trying to lessen the impact on fish. And now we've created
them into the bridge.
We've created a huge problem out of this thing. So we'll have to see where this goes. Hopefully they come up with some resolutions because we really want resolutions that are beneficial not just for surviving smolt, but also apparently our bridge substructure.
And stand the test of time.
And stand the test of
time. That's right.
So, all right, gonna jump out for a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We come back. It's time to talk some steelhead with none other than Jared Cady, Get 'em Dry Fishing Company. After the break, right here at Fishing Northwest.
I make my living catching fish, not only as a tournament angler, but as a guide as well. Catching fish is important, and Gamagatsu hooks for me, you know, they kind of help take the luck out of fishing a little bit just because they're a high quality hook. Obviously, have a really good reputation for being very strong and very sharp. Gamagatsu, I use their products every day in the boat and, you know, big part of my success.
All right, welcome back here in studio. We are connecting with Jared Cady out there on the coast. I think we got him back. Jared, we got you? And maybe not, huh, Jordan? Perhaps not. Okay, well, Tommy, we're going to talk steelhead anyway. So,
all right, let's do it.
Yeah, the numbers out on the coast this year so far, and speaking with Jared and Bobby Kratz and a handful of other guys, the fishing's been pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. They've had some high number days of encountering, you know, steelhead. Now, the interesting thing, according to a handful of folks, is not a lot of real large fish, but the numbers seem to be higher than they've seen in years past or recently, maybe in the last 3-4 years, right? So a lot of fish around, a lot of fish in that 6 to 8, maybe 10 pound range. If they're finding some mid-teeners, it's kind of an anomaly.
What drives that for steelhead? Is that still back to ocean conditions or?
It has to be, feed abundance and, you know, temperatures and all those things that collect forage fish and feed, obviously, and whether it's when they're juvenile fish in the early stages or when they've been out there, you know, 18 months turnaround coming back, and if they're finding enough forage fish to start putting some size on. But interesting comparison down in Oregon, having just been there this last week. And we fished and combated the elements, so to speak. And we ended not obtaining fish that would be recruited into the broodstock program.
So, hatchery fish.
Yeah, here we are, you know, mid-March, and we're finding hatchery fish, clearly marked hatchery fish, and they were all in that 6 to 8 pound range. So, Jordan, we have Jared back yet? No, okay. Okay, maybe he can join us here for a second.
Give it a try.
We're going to give it a try and see if he's available, and if not, we're going to cut his mic. So, is he there? There he is. Hey, all welcome to the program, buddy. Yeah. Jared Cady, Get 'em Dry Fishing Company.
Hey, Wendell.
Yeah. Nice to see it. We'll see how long it lasts. We got connection issues with you out there on the coast, but we'll see. So, we're talking a little bit about this season, abundance of fish, not a lot of large fish, but it seems the fish has been pretty good overall. How would you compare it? We kind of segue into this. How would you compare it with, say, the previous 3-4 years?
I would say it's an average year. I mean, we're catching plenty of fish per day. They are definitely on the small side. It seems like we lost an age group. Probably due to, you know, 3 years ago, we had a lot of hot water. So, there's been plenty of fish. I mean, there's a lot of 6 to 8 pound range. It's really hard to find a 12 pounder. And then it's like real big. It's really hard to find that 15 pound fish.
Gotcha.
So, but I would say, you know, plenty of fish around, and it's definitely average. Nothing like last year. Last year was probably stuff that we'd never really seen in a long, long time. The numbers were just ridiculous. And they also weren't netting this year. They're back to netting again.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah.
And Jared,
you know, we're skiing two days a week.
We've got some limited access again this year due to a number of rivers and regions being closed. Are you seeing, is it more crowded than normal this year, or what have you been seeing out there?
Definitely the classic Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and now Monday are definitely been very crowded. You see a lot of the guys, seems like a lot of people are pulling the drift boats back out now that the lower river flip-flops with the middle river. You definitely see some busy days, but there's still, you know, days that are pretty, you know, nobody. I didn't see a single boat today until 3 o'clock. Mm. So you can definitely get away from the crowds if you do something, you know, late launch, or, you know, just do something alternating versus what everybody is using, the popular put-ins and takeouts. Mm-hmm. And just being versatile and getting out of the boat. You know, just because you can't fish from a boat doesn't mean you should. Mm. As far as where the fish are, or what water levels fish best in each stretch of river, if you know it that well.
Yeah.
You jump around depending on that. That's one thing I tell my clients a lot. Just because we can fish out of the boat doesn't mean we're gonna.
Sure.
It all depends where recent success is and what the tides are doing. Like today I fished down low because the incoming tide was all last night at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And that put those fish in the first couple of miles right when I did that lower end, and I didn't see anybody. So
that's a good call. Yeah, absolutely. All right. It already seems like it's gone by fast, but we started without you. So that's kind of how it goes. We're going to jump out for a quick break so we can get to the gist of the information here with you before we got to end the segment. So jump out for a quick break. We'll be back. More with Jared Cady, Get 'Em Dry Fishing Company, after this break, right here, Fishing Northwest. All right, welcome back here to the show. Jared Cady still holding on for now. Hopefully we retain this connection with him out there on the coast. So, Jared, looks like, you know, fishing, as you mentioned, has been pretty decent. Let's talk a little technique points for folks that are going to venture out that way with the amount of season we have left. Days you can fish from a boat, what's been getting it done as far as your presentation? Mostly vertical with you and your jigs. Fishing some worms on jig heads? Are you pulling any plugs?
I've kind of done everything. It kind of depends on what if I'm around other boats, if I'm leapfrogging with other boats, I'm not doing what they're doing. I'm doing something completely different. I could be pulling plugs. If they're throwing beads, I'm throwing worms and jigs or micro jigs. Nobody's really throwing micro jigs. A little 16th ounce stuff, when the water gets really clear, those fish really well.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes plugging, and then, you know, yeah, I mean, I've definitely plugged on the really busy days and had great, great fishing. And then I've just watched what's going on around me as far as other boats. If they're throwing bright pink, I'm not going to throw pink. So I'm going to throw a different color.
Makes sense.
Yeah, do something there.
Way
now,
to read
right?
the room. Yeah, works well.
That's great. Didn't even think about that. Yeah. So, hey, you know, a lot of folks are going to bobber dogging. And I was just curious, you know, as a guide, are you using that as a tactic, maybe with anglers that don't have a lot of experience on the water targeting steelhead? Is that something you'd use to cover water?
So no, I've actually gone away from bobber dogging because everybody does it. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, bobber dogging is very dependent on flow, on how productive it is, and when I say flow, it's good where those fish that day are holding in different current depths. That definitely determines whether it's bobber doggable, you know. And so I do a lot of, I guess what you could say, finesse bobber dogging, where I'm running a lot longer leader on a bead, with like maybe a single split shot on an 8 or 9 foot leader under my, like a bow mat clear drift, you know, style float to, make it have less disturbance and barely skip, opposed to drag hard, like a bobber dogging, lead will. I want my bead to drag and be upstream of my bobber. My split shot to just barely be touching as it's dragging.
Yeah.
The hoe can be, you know, pretty snaggy if you're not skipping the tops of the rocks or versus in them. So you can lose a lot of gear real fast. So I tend to not really bobber dog the traditional way. Cause those fish crush it. And when they eat it, they can get rid of it just as fast. And traditional bobber dogging needs a fish to really hold on to it, mm-hmm. and to have the correct buoyancy in that float and the correct lead is really, really important to keeping the hook into place. So I end up traditional bobber dogging here. Yeah, it works when the water's high and those fish are on the inside seams and there's enough current to push it. But they don't always lay there, and it depends on the day.
Yeah, so, that makes a lot of sense. I think you also created a new form of grammar, bobber doggable.
I was going to say, yeah. I believe he created a new word that I've never heard before, like bobber doggable. Better put that on a t-shirt. Yeah.
Some water, you can't do it.
Derek Katie, I am bobber doggable. That's kind of like certifiable, actually. Yeah. You are well known for your jigs and your jig company, and you fish a lot of jigs, and you've had pictures over the years of some nice-sized steelhead, 20-pound class range on, you know, 8-ounce jigs and whatnot. When that water gets dirtier, that visibility goes less than 4 feet or so. Will you fish beads in a vertical presentation, a heavy bead or weighted down or something? And how big a bead will you fish for some of these steelhead out there on the coast?
I'll fish at 22 if I have to.
Yeah.
You know, I believe that, you know, those brand new fresh ones down in the tidewater, they've never seen anything before. They'll eat a tire. So
good point. It's a good point.
You throw the biggest, nastiest bead you want.
They're aggressive, man, for sure.
They're so aggressive.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, I'll throw all the way down to a 12 mil. Yeah. And if it's unlimited visibility, high, bright sun, I mean, I've gone to 8 mil sometimes.
Yeah.
And gone really, you know, really, really small and translucent, reflects all light. But yeah, I bounce around, you know, low visibility, fish as big as you want to go. The hardest part is just getting them to see it.
Sure.
Outside of that, as you get, you know, clearer water, and conditions are going to get tough here because we got 10 days of no rain. That stuff's going to get really, really clear. So I'm going to fish really, really small, probably. Mm-hmm. And I've had no problem picking up fish behind people that are throwing the traditional, you know, 16 to 18 mil Charisse or any shade of pink, you know, bead. And if you come back with something way smaller, it's amazing what they actually do see. In all that big water out there, and even in the clear water, fish will move a long way for a bead or a small micro jig or something. It's really amazing how small a thing they see coming by. And you wouldn't think they, you know, would see it, especially the system longer.
Yeah, that's a great point. As we wrap it up here, the takeaways here, if people are paying attention, especially as we get crowded and we're getting into low clear conditions, one, slow it down and read the room, check what other people are using, and scale down. Don't be afraid to scale down, because Jerry is absolutely right. It blows my mind on the distance of how far fish can see things in the water that pique their interest and they'll come to check out. So excellent points. What?
Also, you know, I'm not rolling my hard boat anymore, because when it gets low, you bang a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You rub when you're
going to a raft.
And so I'm rubbing with my raft. That way I don't make that noise when I come into stuff.
Right.
Especially if I'm fishing out of the boat, I get out before I get to the run and walk down to the run, you know, stuff like that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Stealth mode.
Huge difference.
Stealth mode. Well, in the fine, profound words of the world renowned philosopher, Ricky Bobby, Robin's racing. So we got to go up against the break. Appreciate the info tonight. Great, great content. And keep in touch. We'll see you out there.
Thanks.
All right. Have a good one,
Jared. Have a great night.
Jared Katie, Get 'Em Dry Fish Company. Check him out, social media platforms, or look up Ricky Bobby. Either way, you're going to find him. All right, jumping out for a quick break. We come back. Going to close out the show with this guy to my immediate right here, Fish Out Northwest.
Defiance Marine is the one-stop shop for the Pacific Northwest angler. Defiance Marine guarantees the best price on a new and best service on a repower for your current boat. Defiance Marine is a Honda Premier dealership and one of the largest on the West Coast. Defiance Marine is a boat dealer who proudly sells Defiance, Allied, and Arima boats. All boats are built by West Coast fishermen for West Coast fishermen. Defiance Marine has all your boating needs to help you get out on the water.
All right, welcome back here in studios. We wind it down. Boy, tons of info we had to follow through here.
Oh, God.
No time to get it done.
No. We had a book to get through tonight.
We had a book to get through. One thing to take note of, we're going to start announcing it out there now, Tommy. For those of you following us here on Root Sports, typically you'll find us on Sundays at 9 a.m. Due to the Mariners' schedule, as we get into April 6th, as a matter of fact, Root Sports will be moving our program to Saturdays. Back to Saturdays, still at 9 a.m., easy to find. Set your DVRs, and it'll record no matter what. But, 9 a.m. on Saturday, starting April 6th is where you will find Fish on Northwest on Rude Sports. So it doesn't change anything we're doing here in studio.
No, no, absolutely not. And get out there and get some bottom fishing done. If you're up at Nia Bay, you can always fish the Strait.
Ooh, good point.
Keep that in mind, man. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to hide from the wind, that's a good spot to
do it. What's the weather look like this weekend? Did you look?
We're getting some goofy east wind activity right now, which you absolutely hate when you're on the ocean.
Well, that
wind from the east, swell from the west, yep, it's a washing machine.
That would explain the heat index creeping up a little bit. We may be 65, right, you know, 70 degrees down there.
Yeah, it's supposed to be almost 70 degrees this weekend.
Yeah, so we got that to look forward to. All right, that is going to do it for us here this week. Want to thank everybody for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be back here in studio with more reports and a lot more info. Have a great week. Have a great weekend. We will see you next time right here. Fish on Northwest. Hey, thanks for joining us here on the Fish on Northwest weekly podcast. I want to remind everyone that you can catch our weekly live stream show on our Facebook page and, of course, our YouTube channel every Thursday evening at 6 p.m. West Coast time. You'll get our insightful in-studio interviews, our extremely detailed how-to segments in the bait lab, the infield segments we bring to you when we're on the water or in the woods, and of course, our amazing cooking recipes in the kitchen with co-host Sherry England and chef Jeff Maxfield. Give us a follow on our Facebook page at Fish Hunt Northwest. Also subscribe to our YouTube channel at Fish Hunt NW. Find us on Twitter and Instagram, and finally, go to our webpage at www.fishhuntnw.com for all the latest and greatest info. Join us each week here on our podcast. Join us each week at our live production. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.